If you are worried you have Lyme disease, or just like the outdoors, and want the peace of mind of knowing whether you have Lyme disease or not, there is a new Lyme screening test based on decades of research by Dr. Richard Marconi, a professor at VCU Medical Center. For more information, visit glymedx.com. That's glymedx.com. Or email at info@glymedx.com.
Infectious diseases, research, medicine, health. Welcome to Outbreak News Interviews. And now, broadcasting from the Outbreak News Skylar Studios in beautiful West Central Florida, here is your host, microbiologist and editor of OutbreakNewsToday.com, Robert Harriman.
November is Clostridium difficile awareness month. The C. diff Foundation says over 41 individuals lose their life to Clostridium difficile infection in the U.S. every day. It has no boundaries. It can be acquired by anyone at any location and at any age. Well, joining me now to talk about this very important topic is infectious disease physician and returning expert guest, Steve LaRosa, MD. Dr. LaRosa, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Yes, sir. Now, let's start with the most basic question. What is Clostridium difficile?
Okay, so it's a bacteria, and it's classified as a gram-positive bacteria, which is based on a gram-positive rod, which is based on how it appears under the microscope. When it's stained, it appears bluish-purple. It's an anaerobe, which means it grows best in the absence of oxygen. It's in the environment, and it's actually a normal inhabitant of the gastrointestinal tract in the first couple of years of life, where it doesn't cause disease, and likely you develop immunity to it that wanes over time. It lives in the environment in the form of spores. It's very hardy. It can live for quite some time and really requires stringent measures to eradicate it from the environment in terms of bleach and so forth.
Yeah. Now, how common is it in the United States?
Well, it's become a huge healthcare problem. It's the most common cause of hospital-acquired infections. Latest data, about 500,000 cases in the U.S. per year, about 29,000 deaths. $4.8 billion in excess medical costs, and the big problem is the recurrence rate. So even with appropriate treatment, 20 to 30% of people will have a recurrent problem with the infection.
Yeah, now it's really a well-known problem in the healthcare environment. But how about outpatient Clostridium difficile infections? Is this also a growing problem?
Well, we're seeing more and more of it, and that's because people are not necessarily getting hospitalized for procedures, but they're exposed in other outpatient healthcare centers. It's in the community. We're seeing more cases of community-acquired pneumonia. There are some outpatient antibiotics, such as amoxicillin clavulanate, that tend to foster its development. So we're seeing more and more people come from the quote-unquote community with the infection as opposed to who we usually think of as the hospitalized patients.
Now, as a physician, what laboratory procedures or other types of medical procedures do you use to diagnose C. diff?
Well, for C. diff, the test of choice is still a stool. It has to be... It has to be from diarrhea. It has to be a loose stool. And the reason I say this is because up to 10 to 15% of people are colonized with the bacteria. So that's what makes this particularly difficult is you can be colonized and be asymptomatic. So it really has to be a stool that's sent from somebody who's had at least three loose stools in the last 24 hours in the absence of any laxatives. So you send a stool. It's important not to just do a test that looks for the bacteria growing in culture on PCR, but to actually look for an organism that's elaborating toxin, because it is the toxin that causes the pathology that's seen. So a two-tiered test on the stool or from somebody with diarrhea, where you're looking not only for the presence of the organism, but also the presence of toxin.
Now let's switch gears to treatment. What is the standard of care today for C. diff infection?
So the best treatments are for drugs that actually get into the lumen, the inside of the bowel. And so the best agent is oral vancomycin, usually given four times a day for 2 weeks, and the dose varies based on how severe the infection is. If somebody's hospitalized and severely ill, we also add intravenous metronidazole as well.
Now, something since we started talking about antibiotics, Dr. LaRosa, can you explain what antibiotics' role is in C. diff infection, in causing the infection as opposed to treatment?
Right. So think about this. Your bowel contains more bacterial cells than the human cells that compose our body. We are, in essence, more bacteria than we are human cells. And that's not a bad thing with those bacteria being within the bowel, because that's what promotes a lot of your health. It turns out that the more diverse your bowel flora is, the more healthy you tend to be. And when you give antibiotics, it's important to know that you're not only killing whatever bacteria is causing your infection, but you're killing the healthy bacteria that lines your bowel. And that allows C. diff to essentially take hold and competitively take over in the bowel and cause inflammation and the colitis that we see. Now, any antibiotic can cause C. diff, but some are more likely to cause C. diff than others. It's also the number of antibiotics you're on and for how long you're on them, but it's quite clear that antibiotics are the major risk factor for developing C. diff.
Yeah, and the C. diff infection, what type of symptoms would somebody present with?
So typically, you'll have diarrhea, which, again, is defined as at least three loose stools in a 24-hour period. Usually, there's abdominal pain, oftentimes fever. Sometimes the abdominal pain and the fever can precede the diarrhea, and oftentimes even a high white blood cell count can precede those symptoms. Some of the highest white blood cell counts that you'll see in patients are in those people with C. diff, and they may not have evolved to the diarrhea that's so typical.
All right, let's look at a couple of things maybe a little bit in the future as far as C. diff. On my website, I've covered several different antibiotic treatment candidates that are out there, like Ramizole and all that. Do you see any promising antibiotics in the pipeline for the treatment of C. diff?
Well, what I'm seeing that's promising, one agent that's just been approved is bezlotoxumab. It's a monoclonal antibody to the B toxin, which is really what produces the pathology from the infection. And so this is a monoclonal antibody against this toxin B that's been studied in well-done clinical trials and has been shown to decrease the recurrence rate. So I think this is quite striking in its effect. So that's very promising. What I'm particularly excited about is everything that we're learning about the microbiome and what different bacteria may have promising roles in preventing C. diff. So turns out there's a bacteria, Clostridium sindens, that helps produce secondary bile acids in the gut, which seem to be protective. There's a Bacillus species called Bacillus clausii that actually inhibits C. diff toxin production. There's another lactobacillus that actually, when in the presence of glycerol, will make a protein called reuterin, which actually can kill C. diff. So what I'm really intrigued with is more knowledge of bacteria that inhibit C. diff. Also, people are experimenting with non-toxin-producing spores of C. diff as a competitive inhibition strategy. So these are all very exciting.
Right, right. Now, of course, one of the hot topics when you're talking about C. diff infection is the use of fecal transplants. Dr. LaRosa, can you talk a little bit about fecal transplants, what they are, how they're used, and what do you see in the future?
So fecal transplant is basically exactly what it means, is that you take a stool from a healthy individual, in this case somebody who doesn't have C. diff, and a healthy person has great microbial diversity within their gut, and you're basically giving it to somebody with a problem with C. diff in hopes that you'll repopulate the person with C. diff's flora with healthy flora. Now, that can be done through a variety of mechanisms. It's been done by a colonoscopy. So actually, the standard test that people get for colon cancer screening, you can actually instill a healthy donor stool into a subject that way. You can do it through a fecal enema. They've done it enterally through a nasogastric tube. And I think where this is all going is actually what they're doing at Mass General, where they're actually putting the healthy stool into triple-coated gelatin capsules. Mm-hmm. And you can actually take it as just doses of capsules with a healthy stool that makes its way down to the colon. But it's very exciting. It's still a broad brush. I think the future will still be honing in on maybe specific bacteria that are protective. But, you know, with this, with these fecal transplants, we're seeing efficacy rates of about 90%, which seems to be the best thing we have for, again, people get multiple recurrences.
Yeah, since I've been doing this kind of stuff on the side, websites and all that, back in 2009, this is really advanced by leaps and bounds in just that short period of time. Now, there's also some work. Let me see, Pfizer and Valneva, I see both have vaccine candidates for C. diff in different stages of trials. Dr. LaRosa, what are your thoughts on the C. diff vaccine candidates that are out there and the use of this as a prophylactic measure in the future?
Right. So I think the vaccine strategy makes total sense because we know that humoral immunity, producing antibodies against C. diff, is very important in terms of protection. That's probably why a lot of healthcare workers don't get C. diff. I've always been amazed that I can't remember in my practice treating a healthcare worker for C. diff. And the reason is they probably have very good humoral immunity against the bacteria, particularly against the B toxin. And so I think it makes a lot of sense. It's probably why we see more severe cases of C. diff in the elderly, because their antibody levels have waned over time. So I think if we can get a good candidate vaccine, that it likely will be quite helpful.
Okay, and let's close about talking about C. diff prevention and any advice that you would have for patients. You know, how should they approach their healthcare provider, the hospital environment, et cetera?
Right. Well, I think the big thing is a lot of us grow up and think of antibiotics as panacea, as wonder drugs that are safe. And what I'd like to impart is that they're not safe at all. They're playing havoc with a key arm of our defense, which is our gut flora, and that you really should not take an antibiotic unless the doctor absolutely thinks you need it. So for a common cold or viral infection, antibiotics aren't going to do anything, and they're really putting you at risk for C. diff. The other thing we're learning about is acid blockers. Everybody's on the little purple pill for Prilosec for acid blockade. Proton pump inhibitors are actually a risk factor for C. diff, and unless you have severe reflux or gastrointestinal bleeding, you're not really doing yourself any favors by by staying on it. Some other questions to talk to your doctor about is, if you do need an antibiotic, which antibiotic are you being placed on? And making sure your doctor is perhaps choosing one that is less likely to cause C. diff. Again, all antibiotics are a risk, but some have lower risks. And then being on it for as short a duration as possible. And by and large, people tend to get treated for far too long for very common infections. It's important to tell your doctor if you've had C. diff before, because again, that would heighten their awareness and perhaps try to hold off on an antibiotic when you don't need it, or perhaps giving you empiric, preemptive vancomycin. There's some data that that strategy is useful in people who've had C. diff before. And the most important thing in terms of either being in the hospital or visiting people in the hospital is hand washing. Alcohol gels actually don't kill C. diff spores. You actually have to wash your hands. So if you're visiting someone in the hospital, you have to wash your hands. If you're in the hospital, you have to be vigilant that the people taking care of you are actually washing their hands, and they're actually cleaning the environment with agents such as bleach that kill the spores.
Yeah, let me just piggyback on one thing before I let you go, Dr. LaRosa. You were talking about some antibiotics are probably more likely to be implicated in wiping out your intestinal flora. Are these the more broad spectrum antibiotics?
Right. So yeah, the broader the spectrum, the more likely it is to kill more types of bacteria within your bowel. So the thing I didn't talk about is this issue of penicillin allergies. There's still a lot of infections that penicillin is the drug of choice. So you have to be really clear with your doctor about what reaction you had, because if you don't have a true penicillin allergy, you'll probably be given a drug instead that's more likely to cause C. diff. So really clarifying whether you have a penicillin allergy or not is important. Quinolones, things like Cipro, Levaquin, those are things you should be buzzwords that you should think of. They're more apt to cause C. diff, as is Augmentin, amoxicillin clavulanate. So think of those names. Those drugs are more likely to cause C. diff. There are some other agents like doxycycline and Bactrim, which can treat common infections that are less likely to cause C. diff. So the choice of antibiotic is quite important.
Okay, very useful information there. Thank you, Dr. Steve LaRosa, for lending your expertise. I appreciate you coming on the show again.
Thanks again for having me.
You bet.